views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. We are deep into my Break Free of Parenting Pressures series, where I read you sections of my book by the same title. Today, we're continuing in Chapter 11, which is about communication and providing different tools to help you in that regard. It also indicates the end of Part 3, which means we are very close to wrapping up this series. So let's jump right in. Break Free of Parenting Pressures. Embrace Your Natural Guidance. Chapter 11. Are we communicating? Connecting through conversation. Empathic listening is a tool that helps people hear what another person is telling them and build connection at the same time. To do it correctly, we must imagine ourselves in the other person's situation and try to relate to how they are feeling. It must be done with open ears, mind, and heart. Our goal is to detach from our own feelings and work on understanding the feelings of the other person. This can be challenging if what we are hearing affects us as well, but it is a key factor in getting the whole story. The strategy for empathic listening involves the following four steps. Number one, listen to what the other person has to say and focus fully on them. Number two, empathize. Try to think about how that person might be feeling and share these thoughts with the speaker. Number three, reflect back what you have heard and clarify if necessary. And number four, assist with problem solving only if requested to do so. Here is one example of empathic listening that involves a child's emotional outburst. So imagine your child saying, "I hate grandma." Using empathic listening, you might respond with, "You sound angry. What's going on?" "Grandma's mean. She never plays with me." I don't think I'd like it if my grandma never played with me. Especially as she used to play with me a lot. "Yeah, now she's always busy with the baby." You might nod as you respond. "So do you think the problem is that she's spending too much time with the baby?" "Yeah, can I have a cookie?" Now there are two important points with this example. Number one, getting past the strong opening statement that the child made can be a hurdle for many parents. We don't like to hear words like hate and grandma and such in the same sentence. Those are potent words, and if we want to find out where they are coming from, we have to ignore our own emotions and listen for our child's. Number two, the child ended the conversation without asking the parent to help fix the problem. Parents love to fix problems, even when they are not asked to do so. In this case, and in more cases than you might imagine, the child just needed to be heard. His feelings were making him uncomfortable, resulting in his strong opening statement. At some point, he might bring it up with his parent again and ask for help with ideas. But if not, it is far more empowering for him if the parent just allows the conversation to end there. Here's another example of empathic listening, but with a bullying disclosure. These are very difficult for us as parents to handle without getting super emotional. So let's pretend that your child has stayed home and you're trying to figure out what's going on because you can tell that your child isn't sick. And so you've just called them on it. So your child says, I pretended to be sick because Bart said he was going to bash my head in and teach all the wimps at school a lesson. You might respond with something like, wow, that sounds pretty scary. I'm not scared. I'm mad. Okay, mad makes sense too. If it were me, I think I'd be both mad and scared. I guess I'm kind of scared. Could I stay home tomorrow too? I wish I could let you. I don't think I would want to go back either. I think the school might get upset though. They don't care. You can just tell them I'm sick. You know, what Bart is doing is not okay. He has no right to treat you or anybody like that. What he's doing is bullying. How about we come up with a plan to help you work through this problem? In this case, the parent raises the idea of problem solving together. Bullying is a serious issue that arises only when there is a perceived power imbalance of some sort. Often our kids will need some guidance to work their way through it. If the child responded by saying, "No, I'll deal with it myself," the parent could agree, but end with a check back statement. So you'd say something like, "Okay, how about I check in with you again on the weekend to see how it went?" The result would be a child who feels supported, cared for, and empowered by his parents' belief in his ability. Sometimes we have trouble identifying the name of the feeling, and in fact, the speaker himself might not be clear on how he feels. So don't get caught up in identifying the feeling, or it could become a circus. So it might sound like, are you mad? No. Irritated? No. Frustrated? No. Furious? No. The idea is to connect with the person by trying to understand his feeling. Guessing it right is not that important. We will never truly know what's going on inside another person. If he says he is not angry, despite his clenched jaw, red face, and throbbing temple, accept it and move on. Finally, sometimes our child will not be receptive to us, even though we use this communication tool perfectly. If that's the case, and you can tell because he's escalating instead of calming down, ditch the tool and move into self-preservation. Calmly say something like, I can see you're not ready to talk about this now. Let me know if you want to talk later. Then walk away and refuse to engage in further argument. Free parenting tip. Empathic listening helps us to connect with our kids and helps them feel heard and understood. Practice using it on a regular basis and watch your relationship grow. Communicating our underlying message. We all know the way we talk has an influence on how other people respond. What we might not be totally aware of is that the words we say are only a small piece of the message we send. Our body language and tone of voice play a big role in communication and often speak louder than words. Having said that, I find that by becoming aware of the words you are using and really thinking about the message you want to send, your body language and tone will often follow suit. All in all, becoming aware of what and how you say things can make a huge difference in the relationships you build. Let's take a look at some of the more common pitfalls that parents fall into, while keeping in mind that the kindest words in the world can become rude with a simple roll of the eyes or change in tone. So often as parents, we like to boss. We'll say things like, put your books away and come to the table. We also like to meet the child's statement with disbelief. Huh, right, the teacher yelled at you for no reason. you know, you raise your eyebrows and everything. We like to tell the child how they feel. You must be cold. It's cold out here. Put on your jacket. We sometimes use a certain tone, and often it's their name that we use with this. So we might say, "Oh, Jason." Another thing we do is we tell the child what she likes. "You do so like grapes. Eat them." And we like to misuse our parent power. "You'll do it and you'll like it, or your PlayStation is gone." Now, these modes of communication might not sound like a big deal. And in fact, you might be thinking these practices sound like everyday parenting. You are right. They are very common. But imagine what these practices feel like to our kids. To help parents understand this better, during my parenting sessions, I often would have a few volunteers pretend to be my dinner guests. I set a table and I'd have them start by arriving at my door. I would greet them enthusiastically with something like, "Welcome, it's so great to see you. Quick, quick, get in, shut the door, you're letting all the bugs in." I then would insist they wash up before coming to the table, and I'd even smell their hands to see if they use soap. Throughout the meal, I'd ask them questions, then I'd cut them off to correct their behavior, and even hand one of them a tissue in the middle of his story and insist that he wipe his nose. In other words, I treated my guests as if they're children and then talked to the whole group about how it felt. Without fail, the volunteers are surprised at how frustrated or rebellious they felt during the process. One minute, I was friendly and fun. The next, I was telling them what to do in a way that made them feel foolish. Respect is taught through our actions and words. If we want our children to be respectful, we need to model how it is done. We can't teach respect by treating them disrespectfully, even though it might seem more efficient. Here are some good communication methods to help build respect and self-esteem in your child. Number one, ask for things to be done. "Will you please put your books in your room?" Or alternatively, describe a situation and let your child figure out what needs to be done. Like, "Your books are on the dinner table. We're ready to eat." Number two, provide choices or set expectations, and then try not to nag them. So you might say, "Are you going to move your books, or would you like to peel the potatoes, you know, or make supper, set the table, whatever, while I move them?" Another option that Faber and Maslisch, who wrote How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk, that they share in their book, is to make your request and then leave a note. So for example, you might tell them that your books need to move before you use the computer. And then they would find a note on the computer keyboard that reads, "Please move me first, your books." Number three, give your child the benefit of the doubt. "Your teacher yelled at you for no reason." Huh, that must have been confusing. This statement must reflect that you believe what your child has said, so be careful not to sound sarcastic or roll your eyes. Number four, use active or empathic listening to flesh out the story. So, as we just talked about, listen, clarify, and recognize feelings, empathize with them. Use as calm a tone as you can muster and be aware of your body language. Avoid giving advice unless asked. So, if you were saying your teacher yelled at you for no reason, that must have been confusing. Your child might respond with something like, "She's so mean, I hate her." I think I would be angry if someone did that to me. I was embarrassed. I can understand that. So then what happened? Number five, save no for when you really mean it. So try using other terms like maybe, convince me, yes, later, tell me more, let me think about that, or I'm not sure that's going to work, but I'm open to hearing more. When you must use no, be sure you can provide a good reason for it. Free parenting tip: How we communicate with our children should reflect how we want them to talk to others. We model respectful communication by demanding less, giving our child the benefit of the doubt, and by being a good listener. Even respectful communication will sometimes fail to meet the mark, and your child will respond with rude behavior. When this happens, try to be the bigger person and calmly restate your request. You will make mistakes. We all do. Thankfully, our kids give us lots of opportunity to practice. Keeping communication flowing. When our kids are little, they tell us things without regard for consequence to themselves or others. As they grow, they begin to learn that some things they say result in undesirable reactions from adults and might be better left unsaid. From the parents' perspective, we want our kids to trust us enough to share big things, like telling on someone who's planning to do something dangerous, or talking about drugs and alcohol use, or maybe turning in a bully, or confessing to a serious mistake. How we react to this news is going to influence how comfortable they will be telling us things in the future. If we want our kids to share with us, we need to make sure we're not slamming the door in their face when they come to talk to us. Some common door slammers are things like overreacting, demanding answers, threatening, and using sarcasm. So let me give you some examples of each of those. Overreacting, pretty obvious, but saying things like, "I knew you did it," or "This is serious. I'm phoning the school first thing tomorrow and demanding they do something about it." Demanding answers might be insisting they tell you, "Who did it? Tell me so I can let the coach know." Threatening, "Well, tell me the truth right now or you are grounded forever." And sarcasm, "What do you mean it was an accident? Your fist just swung out all on its own." By the time our kids are 3 to 4 years old, the first inklings of self-preservation start to limit what they're willing to share. If a parent asks a child if he wrote on the wall and he's punished when he confesses, then he has learned that telling the truth doesn't feel very good. If, on the other hand, he lies and gets out of it by saying that his one-year-old sister did it, he's learned that telling a lie is worth it. In other words, if there is no benefit to telling the truth, our child might as well lie and then hope that he's never found out. By 7 to 8 years old, the social code for turning in others has been learned. This is the age when our kids' sense of self-worth starts to shift from a family focus to more dependence on peers. The unspoken code comes through clearly. Ratting on a classmate, a bully, or a friend can have very negative consequences. Being picked on, left out, or beaten up for telling on someone is a good reason to keep your mouth shut. Our goal as parents is to open that door to communication as wide as we can so our toddlers and teenagers feel comfortable talking to us about problems big and small. We can do this by allowing the following principles to guide us and teaching them to our children. 1, telling the truth will always be rewarded in some way. 2, there is a difference between tattling or ratting, which is getting someone into trouble, and telling or getting someone out of trouble or danger. And 3, when you take a risk and share sensitive information with me, I, your parent, will do all I can to help and support you in return. We can further reinforce these messages by staying calm when the words that we're hearing are driving us nuts. Door openers are how we do this, and they must be said using a calm, non-judgmental voice and manner, or they will not have the desired effect. So some good door openers are ways to encourage information. So saying things like, "I wonder if you're trying to protect your friend. That's very loyal of you, and I respect that. This is serious stuff, though, and something will have to be done. How about you tell me the rest, and then we'll come up with a plan together?" Staying calm is also important. Thank you for telling me the truth. I know that was hard, and I will take it into account when I'm coming up with the consequence. And finally, clarifying is always important. Let me see if I understand this right. You were playing, and he just ran right into you, and he thought you punched him? Were you guys talking before that? A simple guidance I like to use is, am I being respectful? Would I talk this way to a friend or colleague? If not, how else could I say it? On occasion, I have to remind my kids to be respectful to me, and other times, it's my kids giving me the reminder. You might not like it, Mom, but at least it's the truth. Sometimes, despite our having a great open relationship with our kids, they will neglect to share something we think is worthy of mention. If this happens, try not to be offended and instead use it as a teachable moment. Let your child know that this would have been a good thing to share. It's not always easy to know what falls on the sharing list. When it comes to sharing tough stuff, we all need to be clearly heard. The safer we make this environment for our kids, the more likely the conversation will happen. People always have a reason for doing the things they do. If we can keep communication flowing by really trying to understand our children's point of view, we are opening an important door in our parenting world. Free parenting tip: keeping our kids talking to us requires an atmosphere of trust, predictability, and support, all created using open door communication. Stand up and be counted. Being assertive is about saying what you need to say rather than keeping it bottled up inside or allowing it to explode aggressively all over the other person. It requires tact, personal strength, and clarity of what you believe. It is important when being assertive to understand that this is something we do for ourselves so we can feel good and let go of negative emotions. It is not about getting our way or setting the other person straight. I'm going to say that again. It is not about getting our way or setting the other person straight, but about saying our piece and feeling good about ourselves in the process. Understanding this is important. If we think being assertive is about changing someone else's behavior and he doesn't change, we might feel our assertiveness failed. We can't control other people. If our success relies on other people changing their behavior, life will be very disappointing. Interestingly, one of the great things about being assertive is that the offender is often counting on our passive reaction, you know, where we do nothing, or our aggressive reaction, where we attack them back. When we assertively respond with strength and composure, it can throw the offender off balance and result in a change in his behavior. It can even create a reluctant form of respect and may result in permanent changes in his behavior toward you. When this happens, we should consider it a bonus as we reap the rewards of our honesty and witness a positive result from our actions. If you are already practiced at being assertive, teach the skill to your child by role modeling it often. If, like many people, you've gotten this idea confused with aggression or have become submissive to make life easier, it's a good idea to develop your own skills before concerning yourself with your child's. Remember, our kids learn more from what they see us do than from what we tell them. Another option is to work on this skill together. Role-playing with our kids can be a great way to practice and have some fun. So here's how you be assertive. The stance, well, when I work with students, I have them practice their assertive body by pretending they're wearing a cape and a crown. I explain that their shoulders and head need to be held in a strong, confident position to pass for royalty, and that's exactly what the assertive stance should look like. Shoulders should be up and back, a slight puffing of the chest, if you will, while the head is held high and proud. Lowering of the head in a submissive gesture will cause our crown to topple to the ground, while raising our nose to indicate superiority will make it slip backwards. Hands should be relaxed at our sides. Fists suggest anger and send a message to both our brain and the other person that a fight is looming. Crossed arms tend to indicate defensiveness or fear. So it's okay to put your hands in your pockets, but be sure to display strong shoulders if you do this. And if you do have fists in those pockets, relax them. Your facial expression is important to become aware of as well. When you are angry, afraid, embarrassed, or confident, it's really important part to know what this looks like. This is best practice in front of a mirror so that you can see what confidence looks like and rehearse using that face in private. If you look aggressive, so if you look angry, or you look afraid, like submissive, when you're standing up for yourself, things will likely not go the way you had planned. Once you believe you're able to do it, try it out with people you trust so that they can give you their feedback. Eyes are an important part of assertiveness, so be sure to look at yourself in the mirror during practice and get used to how looking someone in the eye feels. In real situations, you can shift your gaze to the other person's forehead or nose if looking him right in the eyes is too much and it still looks like you're looking them in the eye. Unless it is respectful in your culture to avert your gaze, you cannot look at the floor or ceiling and appear confident, so be sure to get a grip on those eyes. Being assertive means standing up for something important to you, and that also needs to be reflected in your voice. You do not need to sound friendly, but you should not sound angry or afraid either. Take a deep cleansing breath before you begin talking to ensure that your voice comes out strong and true. Remember, you are royalty at this moment. Use a voice that matches that confident authority. What you say when you're being assertive is going to make a difference, so be very careful choosing your words. If you use words that attack, your opponent will likely attack back. Your goal is to get your message across and stand up for what you believe in without causing a battle or putting the other person down. This means you will have to know what your message is, what it is you're standing up for, and practice saying things in ways that support your message. Starting sentences with a statement about your own feelings is less attacking for the other person. So here's some quick examples. I don't like being spoken to in a rude way. Or, I believe what I have to say is important. Please let me finish. Or, I don't appreciate people sitting on the hood of my car. Get off it, please. Another one, I can see you guys are excited about the party, so go. I'm staying here. I can't concentrate with this yelling. Please quiet down so we can talk. And finally, I see you're angry. I'll give you time to calm down before we talk. Assertiveness does not have to be done using I statements, but it works better if we at least think that way to figure out what we are feeling and why. Once we have the information about our feelings, we could change the format to something like, this isn't working for me. When you yell, I can't concentrate. Please stop so we can talk. Polite words like please, thank you, excuse me are not required in assertive statements, but sometimes they just feel right. So if you choose to add them in, make sure they don't come out in a pleading way because that will undermine what you're trying to do. You also should be aware that using manners in a situation like this can create a sense of moral injustice for you if the offender responds rudely. You know, feeling like, how dare he still treat me rudely after I said please? If the person doesn't do as you've asked, you might choose to leave the situation, go for help, or turn your attention to something else. If you allow negative thoughts or feelings to play over and over in your mind, you are doing more harm to yourself than the offender ever could have done. So stand up and be counted, then let it go. That's assertiveness at its best. Free parenting tip, assertiveness is a skill that must be done with your crown and cape firmly in place. It's about standing up for yourself without putting others down and about feeling good as a result of your efforts. I close this chapter with an exercise on being a good listener. I will put that exercise up on my website at vibrantpowerfulmoms.com so that you can check it out there if you like. So this concludes chapter 11, which is part 3 of the book. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and let us know what you loved. Visit vibrantpowerfulmoms.com to find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms.